Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
To me, my Lorehounds, and welcome. Welcome to the Lorehounds MC Universe, your guides to comic books come to life. I'm Alicia.
I'm John, and this is our coverage of Season 1 of X-Men 97 on Disney Plus, the sequel or perhaps soft reboot to the classic X-Men animated series.
In this podcast, we've got one Lorehound who grew up watching the original series and recently rewatched the whole thing, me.
And me, who never watched the original series, but just jumped into this one, and I couldn't stop watching.
Stick around until the end of the podcast for info about our upcoming schedule, as well as news and updates about all of our affiliate podcasts.
If you're enjoying what we do and are interested in supporting the Lorehounds community, check us out on Supercast or Patreon. Supercast is just like Patreon, but built better for podcasters. Subscribers on either platform get early and ad-free podcasts. They get a bunch of other benefits like show guides, more info at the end of the pod.
And if you want to get in touch, then there are a couple options. You can send an email to mcu@thelorehounds.com, or head to our website and either use the voicemail feature or the contact form.
Also, join us on the Discord. We've got a fun and active community with a great moderator team. We've got channels and threads set up for all the different shows and projects that we've got going on. You can find all these links in the show notes for this episode.
Now, ordinarily, Jean would be here with us, obviously, but he's unable to be here due to a family tragedy. So we just want to say that we love and miss you, Jean, and we'll be here with hugs when you're ready to get back on the mic. I want to do a follow-up episode to this one to get Jean's thoughts on this on the season, because I know he's very excited about it. So then we can dive deeper into the comic book comparisons and cameos and all that nerd shit.
You also might notice that I'm not David. With the crush of content coming out right now, we've decided to divide and conquer. And since Alicia is now a full host in her own right, she and Jean can take the lead in the Marvel Universe. And David or I can jump in on an episode if we're feeling especially excited about a show or movie. Just like right now.
So this show, X-Men 97, is a direct continuation of the original animated series from the 90s, but it's written so newbies can jump in. And John, you said you had no trouble following?
I really had no trouble following. I think the most confused I was actually in the finale.
Okay.
But I'll get to that. Are we doing spoiler-free right now?
Yeah, spoiler-free right now. Okay. We'll let you guys all know when the spoilers kick in.
Okay. So yeah, the most confused I was in the finale, but I'll save why.
Okay.
But even so, I still enjoyed the character arcs and the moments between the different groups and the competing motivations. It had these like really complex character arcs. I think the biggest thing that made me light up to this show was I don't have to know anything else in the MCU.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I'm someone who watched pretty much most of the MCU up till Endgame and then fell off. And so I can't keep up these days. I try to turn on Loki. Even Loki, it's a really great self-contained story, but it still feels like I would get so much more out of it if I knew the whole MCU. This just feels like it's its own thing. We're telling a contained story, and I can just sit back and enjoy.
But I think it is still one that, you know, if you know the original story, if you know, you know, all these characters, because there's an insane number of cameos popping up in the background, which, like I said, I want to get into with Jean. But I do think that that adds to it. But maybe you notice it less in this case because it's explicitly set in a different universe from the MCU.
I think, too, the cameos and references are a lot less remember. It's more subtle in the background, whereas sometimes I'm watching an MCU show and I'm like, okay, here's the bit where they bring Hulk in for a minute. And you know what I mean?
Hey, like, they did that in this show, too, though.
That's true. But at least it felt like it made sense in the story. I never felt like anybody was forced in.
Mm-hmm. No. And they just, and it's a blink and you miss it. They're not like, look. It's just you catch it or, you know, you don't.
Right. Right.
But what made you decide to give this a try in the first place?
I was a huge X-Men fan as a kid. I probably did watch the show at some point, but not like regularly. I was such a big fan of the X-Men arcade game. Every time I would find my way to Chuck E. Cheese, whether for a birthday party or something like that, I would do the tunnels and stuff, but I mostly hung out by the X-Men arcade game, and I would play as Nightcrawler every time because that was my favorite guy. And I would just go to town. I would just use up all my tokens playing this X-Men arcade game, which I'm so happy about one of the episodes, but we'll get to that.
Oh, right. Okay, cool. Because I was going to ask you about that for sure. I grew up. This was actually my gateway into Marvel, this animated series,
because Oh, really?
I was just the right age when it was on TV. And I was really into, before that, my whole thing was She-Ra, and I was like, oh, now I'm all about X-Men and I'm obsessed with Storm and I want to change my name to Storm. And
Storm is so cool.
Didn't go along with that one, but
yeah. I mean, I have enjoyed a lot of X-Men media over the years. Like, I really liked the original X-Men trilogy in the early 2000s. I watched Logan and I thought it was fantastic. Like, I think that's still one of the best superhero movies they've made.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, X-Men has always been one of my favorite parts of the entire, you know, Marvel pantheon of content. And so when I hear Bob Iger say stuff like, oh, we're going to go back to the classics, I'm like, oh no, not like Iron Man and, you know, Captain America. Sorry, they're fine, but whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, oh wait, he means X-Men. Yes.
Yeah. I think what's cool about the X-Men compared to the rest of the MCU and especially compared to DC is that X-Men really highlights the difference between the two universes. Whereas the DC superheroes are these superhumans or aliens that are, you know, morally perfect most of the time, and are just overpowered. And the only way that anything troubles them is when their powers are nerfed or there's this like incredibly, incredibly powerful supervillain. Here it's like, oh, these are regular people who just got thrown into this. And they have flaws. They don't act perfectly. They upset each other. They make mistakes. And that's more interesting to me.
Right. Yeah, I agree. This is why I've always been more of a Marvel girl than a DC person. It's rougher, darker, grayer shades of morality. And X-Men has always been especially a hotbed for this sort of storytelling that very clearly reflects the real world, but not being too on the nose, like we talked about with that one Doctor Who episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never felt preached to on this.
Right. Yeah. So what are your hot takes on the season overall, spoiler free?
I thought it was really great. I was shockingly into it from like episode one. I watched episode one and I immediately messaged you and said, I'm coming on the pod.
Yeah. And then the next day you're like, I've watched the first five now.
Yeah. And then the following day, actually, I think it was later that day, I was like, okay, I finished it.
Yeah.
I was so into this and I was like humming to myself as I was cleaning. I was like,
yeah,
it's got such catchy music. It's so
iconic 90s. Theme song. Yeah,
it's so 90s. I love it. The animation is cool. I hate Xavier's voice, but other than that, the voice acting is great. And I don't know, it's just such, every episode feels like it has enough plot to last half a season.
Yes, I know. It's such a breakneck pace that the season's going in. Yeah. Sometimes a little too fast for me, but just because I think you can get so much more out of these stories. Like sometimes it's actually, I mean, I guess that's always the case when you adapt from a literary source. And yes, I'm calling comics literature for this analogy. You're paring down the story a bit. And that's what happened, you know?
Yeah. But it's just crazy to me that they do well doing these breakneck speed arcs where one episode will contain like a full character arc a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so good. And in like a 28-minute episode, right? They're not long.
No, exactly. I mean, that's why another reason why it's easy to binge. So if you haven't seen it, you can binge it in a day easily.
Yeah. And I've been a known hater of the MCU, and not really, you know, I don't hate it. I it's not my main thing.
You've checked
and this
out. Yeah.
Really excited me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, for comics lovers, it's maybe the best comics adaptation ever. The original series was also, but I don't know. This is just, it's surprising to me. Like you think, oh, but they're not going to do that on screen. And like, oh yes, they do. This is not a kid's show, by the way. I think we can agree on that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty violent. And it deals with a lot of adult themes, like what it means to become a parent and things like that. And how marriages are built on trust and what happens when that trust is broken a little bit.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's really, and like complex moral debates, right? The debate between Xavier and Magneto is something that I think is universal and spoiler free. Mm-hmm. Universal within the X-Men stuff. This whole idea of one wants to integrate with society, one wants to, you know, basically win.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and because he says they'll never accept us. So we have to, if we want to live free, we need to be in charge.
Right. And so it's a really interesting debate, and they do really interesting things with it that I wasn't expecting, even from episode one.
Yeah. Yeah, because it is true that, you know, the X-Men themes are always the same. It's always about the outsiders and, you know, how society treats people who they are afraid of.
Family kind of themes.
Yeah, but they managed to still make the stories definitely covering these themes, but feeling fresh with new angles.
Yeah, yeah. And that could be also that I've not been watching X-Men stuff for years.
Right.
But
well,
I don't know. It's really fresh to me. It feels exciting to me in a way that I haven't been excited for an MCU property in a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. I also like how they updated the art versus the original. It still feels the same, and it's like has this retro animation. I keep staring at the animation and noticing how much they hold still and animate just little parts, which is a good way to save money, but it still looks great. I love the way the vivid colors that they use. And I just, in general, the characters, not just how they look, because I love also that they have sort of a fashion show of iconic comic book looks going on throughout. So like, and now here's Storm with the mohawk. And now here's Storm with her classic black suit, you know?
Right, right.
But I love just this version of the characters. This is who I hope the MCU is using as the model for their take on X-Men.
They're not.
That's not true.
Oh, ye of little faith. It's me. Oh, me of little faith. No, it's not that. I do think that there is merit to having different versions of comic book characters, because comics have different versions of those characters. And I would be okay with seeing, as long as it's an interesting story with compelling characters, I'd be okay with seeing different versions and having this be like the animated series version.
Sure. I mean, not like literal, but this is still going to be part of the same multiverse. So it is, for instance, you know, we saw Charles Xavier in Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. We saw him in his yellow thing from this series. You know, we saw the version of Beast that was modeled after his character from this series at the end of the Marvels. So they are definitely, you know, they're all different versions of Loki in Loki, but some are completely different and some are quite close. So it, you know, it'll be the same with the X-Men characters.
Are we going to get Crocodile Cyclops?
I hope so, with lasers in his eyes.
Yeah. Seems dangerous.
Yeah. So, yeah, normally it's been a while since we've done an MCU episode, and normally we'd go through some Marvel news, but I'm going to save most of that to talk over with Jean because, you know, we have to respond to things like the Spider-Within shorts and the Fantastic Four castings and the Deadpool and Wolverine hype and all the stuff Bob Iger is saying, the upcoming schedule and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, that's we're going to have a proper nerd out about that at some point. But I will say right now that I am super excited for Agatha All Along, and always known it's going to be, maybe not always, but I've known for a long time that's going to be the title, and the rest of the fake out titles are episode titles.
That is, yeah, pretty funny. That's, yeah, a good bit that they did.
Yeah, I think the last one they did was Agatha the Lying Witch with Great Wardrobe. Like, people, yeah, are like, come on, you're, yeah, just trolling us now. And they're like, yeah, actually we are. It's Agatha All Along.
It's pretty funny, though. I yeah, do appreciate a good bit, and they did it. They pulled it off.
But yeah, that series is going to start with a double episode on September 18th, and I definitely want to do weekly coverage of that. It's one of the shows I'm most excited for.
That's interesting, because I turned to my wife when I saw that on our Discord, because, you know, we talk a lot about TV news and film news, mm-hmm, on our Discord. And I turned to my wife and I said, who asked for this?
Me. I asked for this.
And then, like, minutes later, you said, I'm so excited for this. And I was like, oh, Alicia asked for it.
Of course I asked for this. It's basically like a sequel to WandaVision, and it's centered on witches. Yes, this is written for me.
I love that actor. I think she's super hilarious. I don't know
Catherine
her name.
Hahn.
Yeah. Catherine Hahn, yeah. I love her in Parks and Rec and whatnot. And she was really good in, like, The Visit, if you ever saw that horror movie. Mm-hmm. Very good one. But I just was not a big fan of the Agatha character, and I did watch all of WandaVision.
Well, I am sorry for you, because she's amazing.
Okay. All right. Maybe I'll tune in. Maybe I'll tune in and see what's going on.
Yeah, I'm excited for Aubrey Plaza is going to play a fun character, too. And, okay. It's, yeah. And we got Patti LuPone in there. And yeah.
I think what makes me hesitant is it's a spinoff of a spinoff. And I was already a little lost in some points. With WandaVision, I think WandaVision's a spinoff.
A spinoff of the movies? Is every TV show a spinoff of? I mean, it's all an interconnected universe. And, you know, Agatha is a character in her own right in the comics. So she's, okay, getting her due.
I thought this was a show creation the entire time.
No. No, she's a,
well,
real
then
character.
I'm just stupid.
No, that's fine.
That's,
I mean,
really,
you know,
that's really what's going on here. No, I think, again, what makes me hesitant to watch it is the interconnectivity, right? Is what am I going to miss? And that's,
I think,
something
if you've
I
seen
WandaVision,
that's
podcast. Okay. Well, something that I want to pose on this podcast is it worth it for Marvel to start opening up other parts of the multiverse and not have them connect very often?
Well, I think that that's part of what they're doing now with stuff like this, but also there's something coming, and a big event coming in a few years called Secret Wars, and that's going to be what ends this current saga. And Secret Wars is basically a wiping clean of everything. So all the universes are already starting to collide in the stories, and it comes to like a battle royale, and then just they can pick and choose which characters they want to survive in which versions from which universes, and then kind of like start over fresh in a way.
Yeah. I mean, this kind of thing has been on my mind because, you know, we just rebooted Doctor Who with a soft reboot. And I'm just like, how do you onboard new people? I mean, Doctor Who is even worse because it's a 60-year show. Mm-hmm. But this is like 20 years. I mean, there's Gen Zers who are into the Marvel stuff that weren't even born when Iron Man came out, right? I just don't know. I don't know if it's effective to keep going further down the member Barry rabbit hole with all this. But again, I may not be the target audience, right? And that's okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, yeah, they do have this plan to wipe the slate clean. And I think they were going to hold the X-Men back until after that, until people are like unhappy with them. And they're like, oh, okay, no, we have X-Men. but I understand where you're coming from. I think it's this completionist syndrome thing, because really you can watch anything on its own and just enjoy it on its own. It's just that our own mental blocks that are like, no, but I must know all of the context.
Yeah. Well, that, but also you know, there are movies that they put out in recent years where the criticism is, this was a bridge movie. Why did you have to make this its own thing? Right? Like, I think Quantumania had that criticism, right?
Yeah. I mean, Quantumania just felt too flimsy overall for me. That was my issue with it.
Well, anyway, I'm done complaining.
Yeah.
I think the point I'm trying to make is this series really excited me and felt inviting.
Right, right. It's fresh.
In a way that I haven't felt invited to the party in a while.
Right.
And I'm wondering if doing more of this would get more people excited for these properties.
Yeah, although I have to say that they are probably, they're teasing an interconnected animated series because the 90s animated series were interconnected. And now we're getting cameos from other characters from like the Fantastic Four and Spider-Man and stuff. So they might end up having an interconnected animated series.
Okay, well, but like if you're doing two or three series slightly interconnected, cool.
Yeah.
I just, you know, how many movies are there now? Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's
a lot
of stuff to keep track of.
I understand. Yeah. Well, so I have good news and bad news about the future of this series. The good news is that season two is written and in development, and season three has already been greenlit. The bad news is that Beau DeMeo, who is basically considered the brainchild behind this incarnation of it. Like, he was the one who came in with the passion. He's like, as a queer Black man, this is a story I need to tell. And I had all these ideas. And he's been fired. We don't exactly know why. There's, you know, there's stuff being said about an OnlyFans, but the Marvel executives have come out and said it's not that, or at least it's not only that. So I'm not going to speculate, but we do know he was involved in the writing of season two, but presumably he's not going to be involved in season three. But the director, the supervising director, Jake Castorena, I think he will be. So there is that bridge, and presumably the rest of the writer's room is there. So I'm not so concerned about season three, but we have to address that up front.
Yeah, that's a shame. And again, let's not speculate, but yeah, it's always a shame when sort of the head of these shows has to head out when they're doing a good job. As far as the content, I don't know what he was doing behind the scenes.
Right.
But as far as the content, I mean, this was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if there's a reason to fire him, you know, if it's not like, but there's anyway, not going to speculate. But I'm not going to worry about it until I think there's something to worry about, because everyone else is still on board, and it takes more than one person to make a show like this and to make this show what it is. So
we're on the same brain here. We've got a transition out of I'm trying to see, should we teleport? Who's teleporting?
Nightcrawler
teleports. Let's teleport into the spoiler section.
Okay.
But after a break. All right. See you there.
Okay. Shall we get into the spoilers now?
I would love to.
So we're going to go through the major story arcs one at a time. But before that, I'm curious, what is the part in the last episode that you were a little confused about?
Oh, it's the Phoenix thing. I was like, how the hell did this happen?
Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What is this? Where did this come from? I get the sense that this has happened before, but I have no context.
Right. I did think that too, where that happened. I was like, that came out of nowhere, even though I know. So there's a couple iconic long story arcs in the original series about Jean Grey and the Phoenix Force, and even have, you know, knowing all that. And of course, we've also seen that story adapted in the movies twice, and neither of them held a candle to the version of the animated series. But even knowing all that, I was like, that came out of nowhere and but it was a wild roller coaster ride. It was just kind of a deus ex machina situation.
Yeah, I didn't know what was happening. And you're right, it was a deus ex machina. But at the same time, this kind of series, it feels right to have a deus ex machina.
Yeah. No, it's a comic book series, first and foremost.
Yeah, that, and I do think that the overall resolution felt earned, this whole thing with Charles and Magnus.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I was still fine with it. I was just like, I gotta ask Alicia about the Phoenix thing on the podcast. Like, I don't, what is the Phoenix Force? What is anything about this? How did this happen?
Yeah, no, I mean, we'll talk about that a little more in the end, but it's just basically this, it's a force that comes back in the comics. Like, several different people have it in the comics, but most iconically Jean Grey, and it's kind of like an alien entity that takes over the body and gives extra powers and makes you very OP. But then they can conveniently separate you from the alien entity because, you know, it can bring on bad behavior when they want to power down that character. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were a lot of ways that they played with power level in this series.
Yeah, absolutely.
But let's get into the arcs first.
Okay, we'll so yeah, before we get to Jean Grey, let's start with the Summers family saga. So Scott, aka Cyclops, and Jean Grey seem very happy and have a happy little baby together until the real Jean Grey shows up at their door and they realize that who they thought was Jean Grey is actually a clone who they start calling Madeline Pryor. She is the young baby Nathan's mom and the person who's been living with and loving Scott all this time. How much time exactly, no one knows. When Mr. Sinister infects the baby with a technovirus, making its return from the original series, time traveler Bishop takes the child into the future where he can be cured, but his parents cannot follow. Shaken to her core and prodded on by her creator, Mr. Sinister, Madeline transforms into the Goblin Queen. But once Jean talks her down, she leaves the X-Men compound and Jean slips uneasily back into her life there with Scott. So first of all, how trippy cool was episode 3, Fire Made Flesh?
What happened in that episode? Because I binged this whole thing.
Right. That was the episode where they start Gambit sees Rogue and Magneto kind of like morphing together and they're all seeing mm-hmm. their nightmares and the house is kind of morphing.
That was cool. That was really cool. And then Jean's like, enough of that. We're all chilling here. I have a lot of questions about this Jean Grey thing, this clone thing. Like, mm-hmm. why does she have the memories of Madeline?
Yeah, I mean, they haven't, because they're psychics, basically. So, and they just have that mental link.
Okay, they just had an unaware mental link.
Yeah, I mean, I guess because, so basically Mr. Sinister, he's a classic villain and he has a great standalone episode in the original series. If anyone wants to watch, you can just watch that episode set in the 19th century called Descent. It's from season 5, episode 12. And you see, he's always been all about like experimenting with the mutants and trying to create like the ultimate mutant. And he was kind of involved with the early mutant development of both Jean Grey and the Summers family. So he thinks their child is going to be the ultimate mutant. And so he's manipulating things too. And he wants this child. That's why at the end he's like, you said that I could have Cable, you know?
That's interesting. I like that backstory. I think I'm gonna be honest, I'm probably gonna go back and watch the animated series. This has inspired me.
A lot of people have started going back now, and it's a rougher watch just because it's from the 90s and the animation is, you know, but it's worth it. It's slow at start, but then by the end it gets into those sweeping storylines like the Phoenix Saga.
I did see one TikTok where somebody took a little clip of, I forgot who it was, but somebody going to save somebody in the water and going like, like screaming really weirdly as they dive down. And I was like, this is so 90s. I love it.
And I do have to say one change in this show that I noticed that I don't love is I got mad. I found a lot at the female characters. Like, it felt like the female characters were often portrayed in ways that were untrustworthy. And like, for instance, when Jean kisses Wolverine and then gets jealous about Scott, and I know that that's something that can happen, but I don't know, I'll bring up a couple more examples that happen, but that's something that's maybe could change in season 3 if we get some. Of course, on the other hand, there are kind characters like Storm. Like, no one would ever write Storm as anything but awesome. Sorry I say that, but the Foxman movies exist.
I don't remember what happened in those, so, and I did enjoy them when they came out, but I don't remember like anything about them. But fair. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, Rogue has her trustworthy issues too.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we do get some pretty iffy storylines with the men too. I mean, Cyclops not saying goodbye to Nathan is icky.
I've never loved that character though.
Cyclops in general?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. He's a little generic.
Yeah. He's the DC character in this group.
Oh, you're right. He is the DC character. And he's even got one of the Superman powers.
True.
And of course you have Magneto, who's mm-hmm. been on and off villaining forever. But I get your point, is like, even the heroes in this story that are female have these portrayals of being untrustworthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do like Jubilee. Like, Jubilee, mm-hmm. I know that they were,
but
like,
even she turns on Sunspot in the end when they fight.
Mm. Okay. All right. I see your point.
No, but okay. So speaking of the only, no, I don't mean to be dramatic, but speaking of Storm, so we get also in the midst of all of this, Summer's family drama, in a battle, Storm gets blasted with a gun that strips her of her powers. And after leaving the X-Men, she meets a bionic man named Forge, and they fall in love, live in isolation as he tries to cure her. And she finds out that he had a hand in inventing the technology that did this to her. But she forgives him. And ultimately, it's the meddling of a demon named Adversary who helps her heal herself and get her powers back.
Yeah, so that part baffled me.
Yeah.
What is happening with this demon? Like, there was a certain part where I just had to let go and say, I'm not going to understand all of this. I'm just going to have to take them at their word.
Right. I think, yeah, this show does demand a certain amount of that, yeah. But I think, I know Jean is going to be especially excited to talk about this storyline because I know he was a big fan of the adaptation choices they made.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I saw Jean going like, Storm! in our chat.
He and I share a love of Storm.
I mean, Storm's super cool. The thing that worried me the most about Storm in episode one, I was like, okay, she's basically like a deity. Like, she is so mm-hmm. OP.
She is.
How
no,
do they
she
ever
is a goddess.
Lose any battles, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is why she has to be depowered at some points. But you notice that when she first shows up to fight the Sentinels at the beginning of the season, they say Omega level threat detected. And a bunch of us were taking to Twitter like, yes, they finally said it in a show. She's an Omega level threat, which is the... Only she and Magneto in this show are classified as Omega level threats. Well, I guess Phoenix Force, but.
Yeah. And I have plenty of questions about the scope of Jean Grey's powers, too.
Mm-hmm.
They're
all over
the
place.
They don't
always
take fall damage in the show. Can we also say that? There's no fall damage.
They all have just a little bit of super healing. I don't know. They just imagine, just imagine Beast chasing them around, healing them up.
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, they also characters who are supposed to be dead aren't necessarily. Did you think that Charles was dead at the start of the season when they said that? Or did you?
I did.
Know?
And I thought it was an interesting framing.
OK. Yeah.
I was convinced.
And
then he comes back and you're like, oh,
yeah,
that's a different story. I did not care for the whole Shi'ar plotline.
Okay, well, just to run through the Shi'ar plotline real quick. So the viewers of the original show know that Professor X was taken off-world in a coma at the end of the previous show by the love of his life, the Shi'ar Empress Lilandra, to save him using their superior technology. And he's now set to become the Shi'ar Emperor, but the bird people won't accept him because Deathbird, Lilandra's evil sexy sister, keeps stirring shit up. And he's asked to wipe his memory of his human past and his X-Men, but ultimately can't do it. And he takes the Shi'ar to school, literally in the astral plane, to talk to them about their behavior. But once he becomes aware of a tragic event on Earth, he realizes it's time to go home. So, yeah, and this is another one where Lilandra asked him to forget everything that makes him him. Like, what kind of behavior is that? That's not love.
And that's not, then it's not him anymore. Like, mm-hmm, me without my memories is not me.
Exactly. Yeah. And also another thing that I don't know how I feel about the fact he has that Shi'ar armor that allows him to walk. Just because I know... a lot of people don't like stories about disabilities being quote unquote fixed, you know?
Yeah, I hear that.
But they drop it pretty quick.
Yeah, they do. They do. He's right back. He's right back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just didn't like the Shiar plot line. Shinar?
Shiar.
Shiar. Okay. Yeah. I see Shinar somewhere
else. Oh, sorry. It's that auto-corrects. Yeah.
It's Wheel of Time. The Shiar plot line I didn't really care for in general. I just think that the whole taking them to school was kind of silly. The whole he's not going to forget his stuff. Although this show does do surprising things at times. Mm-hmm. It felt like an unnecessary pit stop. You know what I mean? It just felt to me like, okay, we're definitely going to go back to Earth. So when is that happening? Now, at the same time, I think that would have felt less like an unnecessary pit stop if I had known he was taken there at the end of the animated series.
Right. Right. I think that
it felt
is
to
one
me
of the
like
ones.
They were adding this.
Right. Yeah, because it is just the Shiar in general, the whole friction with them, because they're an imperialist culture, a conquering culture. So there's lots of battles with them before Charles and Lilandra fall in love. So that is probably one of the storylines that's gives more to people who saw the original series.
Yeah, that makes sense. So yeah, there are places where it helps to know the original series, though I did enjoy most of this series a lot without it.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jubilee. Yeah. You're saying you like Jubilee. So she meets someone called Sunspot and the junior X-Men team grows. So his name is Roberto da Costa, and he's the scion of a wealthy Brazilian American family. And he's afraid to tell his parents about his mutant powers. He and Jubilee start dating, and she convinces him to come out to his parents. And mom seems surprisingly accepting at first, but in like a let's just keep this private way, which Jubilee's rightfully pissed off about. And but when push comes to shove and the mutants start being targeted, mom turns her own son in, sending him reeling toward the darker side of the mutant philosophical thinking. So
yeah,
what did
you know, I really like this plot line with his parents, especially Sunspot, because, you know, we talked in Doctor Who about how some adoptees are saying the whole Ruby plot line is exhausting because the only story they ever tell about an adoptee is who are my birth parents.
Right.
And with coming out as a mutant, you know, you can see the obvious comparison to like coming out as gay or trans or something like that to your parents. And, you know, it reminds me almost of like the twist in Schitt's Creek. I don't want to spoil that entirely, but the way that, you know, the parents are upset, not that their son is gay, but that he didn't want to tell them.
Right. Exactly. I think for a lot of people, it feels like that.
Yeah. And so this feels like another twist on this, right? Like, oh yeah, you're fine with us, but we got to worry about the capitalist
implications. What other people say, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And that's more interesting to me than either or, the explicit rejection or explicit acceptance.
Right. No, I mean, I know that when people say, well, it's not that I don't want you to date such and such. I just don't want you to deal with the fallout that dating such and such a person, you know, yeah. Yep. I also have to shout out, Jean brought up a colorism issue with Sunspot, who apparently, I didn't know about this, but there was a whole controversy about the character in the comics about the fact that he was, he is of like an African background, but Brazilian, and Afro-Brazilian is obviously a huge population there. Brazil is one of the most, most like, you know, mixed color countries in the world. But for this TV show, they decided to make him more of the indigenous background. And that, you know, rubbed Jean and I'm sure many other people the wrong way, which I can understand. So,
yeah. Yeah, I hear you. That's unfortunate.
But I liked that Jubilee finally got an age-appropriate love interest. I have to say, there are some incidents in the original series where she's crushing on much older men. I'm like, oh,
Oh, no.
Give her another teen, please.
Yeah, I had no idea about that because I hadn't watched it. But yeah, I'm glad that this is age appropriate. The vibe of Jubilee is so cool, right? Like, yeah. She's just like into the video games.
She's so 90s.
Yeah, absolutely. She I loved the Motendo episode. I know I see your question here.
Yeah.
Because again, I loved that 90s X-Men video game. And it's interesting when I was an adult. I still am, but when I became an adult, I had moved to Asheville, North Carolina for a couple of years, and there's a retrocade there. There's a barcade kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they had that machine, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And they had all the machines unlocked so that you like didn't have to pay for any rounds as long as you paid like the entry fee to the place. And boy, was that fun. I just stood there for like an hour and I just played this game that I could never beat.
Yeah, no, I was an arcade kid. I grew up a gamer kid, so I love that episode too. And it's also packed with Easter eggs, so a lot of callbacks to the original series in there. But as you say, like you can just enjoy it regardless, and that's what something this show does well.
Yeah,
and the
animation style between the game and the Nintendo is like identical. Like I thought I was just watching footage of the game.
I love when they like switch up the animation within the animation.
Mm-hmm.
I have to call out one of the Easter eggs is that Abscissa, the older version of herself that she meets, was voiced by the original actress who played Jubilee in the original animated series. But then she stepped aside and said, you know what, an Asian American should play this character.
Yeah, that's a good decision. But but cool that they had the old voice actor.
Yeah, no, that was a really cool callback. This is, I guess, kind of like the most quote unquote filler of the episodes, but I liked it. And I wish that there were longer seasons so that we could get more like this.
I saw TikTok the other day talking about how like we don't give TV shows room to breathe anymore with these eight episode seasons.
Right.
And I think that this was some nice breathing. And I think the reason that I thought it was nice was it finally gave Jubilee a chance to like sit there and be like, what do I want with my life?
Right.
Is it okay for me to sort of mature a little bit? And and that's, I'm a sucker for a good coming of age story, you know?
Yeah. Cause she was always like the cheesiest character, which I mean, I guess that's why she didn't show up in live action yet. And I love, you know, her name's Jubilation Lee, for God's sake. And I love the snark she got from Bastion in the last episode about having like sparkler powers. But
yeah,
she is a fan favorite. And I think it's okay to let her, like the version of her as a teenager is always going to exist. And it's okay to let her develop further now, too.
Right. Yeah, I think it'd be cool to see an adult Jubilee. But also, if they don't have her blowing a bubblegum bubble and popping a bubblegum bubble and their first shot in the live action version of her, they're making a mistake. Right.
Well, like, even Abscissa, the older version, was still popping the bubblegum.
Yeah. I mean, you just gotta.
How did you feel, by the way, about their decision to splice the Storm storyline across episodes like this? You know, so we got this Motendo episode and then we got like a little sliver of Storm's story. That's a tongue twister.
It did feel a little artificial, like especially in this show. It felt like they were making the story arcs match the episodes. You know, a story arc would begin and end within an episode usually. And there were carryovers, of course, but the main resolution would happen in one episode. It's an interesting choice, and I don't know if it was the right choice to splice the Storm storyline over. But at the same time, it would feel a little rushed if Storm's like, okay, this episode, I lost my powers. The next episode or two episodes later, when I show up again, I'm going to get my powers back within one episode. So yeah. I see why they did that.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, so the original animated series, one of the reasons why it's so beloved is that it was one of the first to do serialized storytelling. So, for example, like that Phoenix Saga, I think the second part of it had 5 episodes. They are tipping their hat to that. But this one felt the most like jarring. Like, okay, now we really are. Okay, so right now I've been watching the Young Jedi Adventures, which is a preschool Star Wars show, but you know, they do it. So they have literally two totally different unrelated episodes, 15 minutes each in one half hour episode.
Right. Right.
And this felt like that, where it's really like, okay, now I have to, we're completely doing a different episode now. It's not like, and meanwhile, you know, it felt just a little bit jarring, but I understand wanting to split Storm's arc up a bit.
Yeah. Can I also tell you on Young Jedi Adventures as an aside, my daughter, who is preschool age, hates Young Jedi Adventures, will not watch it.
Why?
But she loves the Clone Wars.
Oh. She likes the darkness?
She likes the darkness. And she loves the theme. She like pretends to play the drums in the air when she hears the opening theme.
Anyway. So what is it about Young Jedi Adventures? It's too like...
She's like, no, no.
No, it's too juvenile for her.
I don't know. And she'll watch... She watches plenty. You know, she yeah. likes like the classic stuff too. Like she likes... like 90s Magic School Bus, but
yeah,
anyway,
Clone Wars is objectively better.
it is. She has good taste, you know. Yeah. She's my daughter, she has good taste. She'll be on the pod soon.
Yeah, awesome. So okay, speaking of good taste, the blue guys, we've got Beast and Nightcrawler, two true blue characters who never did a thing wrong in their lives. They didn't get much of their own arcs, but we've got like Beast, the scientist character. He almost gets a love story in this, but it gets crushed again. I have to shout out, there's a good standalone episode from the original series called Beauty and the Beast. It's one of the best. And that's also about a tragic love story.
That's sad.
Yeah. So, but at the end, the Dr. Cooper, she did get her brain back. So hopefully things can rekindle next season. Maybe that'll be a bright spot going into the new season.
We'll see. Can I say I didn't know Nightcrawler had an accent the entire time?
Oh, yeah. He was picked up in, oh my gosh, I should know this, like Switzerland.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, my introduction to him, I thought he was the coolest in that X-Men game, but I don't think there was any voice acting in that game.
Right.
So I'm just like, oh, he could teleport. Super cool. I like how he looks.
Right.
But I had no idea he was an American.
Yeah, he was living in a monastery, and in the original series, Rogue and Gambit, they find him there, and then they find out that Rogue is actually, she was the adopted daughter of Mystique, and we find out that Nightcrawler is, and Mystique is, of course, the shape-shifting one played by Rebecca Romijn and, what's her name, Jennifer, oh, shoot, you know.
The person.
Yeah, Hunger Games, Katniss. But yeah, so Mystique, before she adopted Rogue, she had Nightcrawler, but he came out like blue and in like this demon shape, and she's like, he can't hide who he is. So she ends up, you know, doing the classic, putting him in a basket and sending him down river thing. And
he ends up
growing up in this, not convent, what do you call it? A monastery with the monks? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So that's why he and Rogue call each other brother and sister, because they were both from Mystique.
That makes sense now. That makes a lot more sense.
Hmm. What did you think of Morph?
Morph, I couldn't get a read on. I did enjoy the comedy sometimes, like when Wolverine's like almost dying and Morph's like, oh, Jean can't tell you that she loves you, but here you go. I love you, Wolverine. That was good.
Yeah, they've been used for comic relief so far. There is a lot of story to mine. Actually, Morph got like a really roller coaster story over the first series. Morph was one of the original characters in the first episode. And then, well, I won't spoil things, but it's a lot of like ups and downs with Morph disappearing for a while at a time. And there were some questions about Morph's powers, so just want to say Morph can transform into anyone they've met and use their physical powers, so like flight or Hulk smash, which kind of makes them one of the most OP characters, low-key.
Yeah. But so you said physical powers. Does that mean like Jean Grey's psychic?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, that seems to be the case, yeah.
So he can use the telekinetic powers?
I don't think that was also mental.
Okay, fair enough.
And not like magic powers or anything like that. But if somebody has wings, then Morph can fly. And yeah, they did redesign the character and gave them an MB identity, which I'm completely on board with. I think that makes sense. It makes sense for a shapeshifter to have a more amorphous look.
That works for me, you know?
Yeah. But I think they didn't get their own storyline this season. Good comic relief again, but I think that could be an interesting character to delve deeper in future seasons.
Yeah.
All right. So this brings us to kind of like the heart of the season, which is,
if you will,
the meat. Yeah. So
speaking of the vegan,
I call this Magneto in charge. So when Charles was presumed dead, he left the X-Men to his best frenemy, Magneto, a move that confused and angered a lot of people given Magneto's extremist past, and especially upset Rogue's love, Gambit, because it turns out that his lady and sexy DILF Magneto have a history.
Oh, he's a GILF. Look at him.
Yeah, he's a GILF. That's fair. Because they did make references to his concentration camp past, so that ages him. But Rogue and Magneto have the ability to touch each other. And when Magneto asks Rogue to be his queen of his mutant country of Genosha, she accepts publicly, but quickly regrets that choice and pledges her heart to Gambit, only it's too late. Genosha, Magneto's old stomping grounds from the original series, is now flourishing as a mutant paradise and ready to join the UN. However, the day of celebration turns into a day of tragedy when there's a sentinel attack. Many die, including Madeline Pryor, and mutant dreams of peace, but it is the death of Gambit, who sacrifices himself to take the Master Sentinel down, that sends an entire fandom collectively reeling. So, yeah, first of all, I just have to say episode 5, called Remember It, is being put forward for animated Emmy consideration. Do you think that's... are you behind that, John?
It was a good episode. It was really good. I'm into it. I'm into it. Is there a separate Emmy for animated series?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I think that's pretty good luck.
Yeah. There's some good competition, but what would you say is your favorite episode of this, or does any like particular episode or storyline stand out to you?
You're asking me this after I binge like the
no,
whole
okay,
thing.
No, okay, storyline is a particular
storyline. Storyline. I actually, as much as I did not like the Xavier voice acting, I did really enjoy, because I'm a sucker for a philosophical debate. I did really enjoy, you know, the whole Magneto redemption arc with Xavier's help.
Okay. Okay. For me, it's the tragedy of Rogue. It's always the tragedy of Rogue with me. You know, she can't touch people, and that's, I just can't imagine.
Yeah, that
is bad. Touch people and not be able to. And so you can understand to a certain degree with, you know, because Magneto, since they both, he can basically disarm her powers with his magnetic powers and whatever hand wavy comic book.
Yeah.
but the fact is that they can touch skin to skin. And that's something, you know, Gambit is her love, but you can see when she kisses him in opening, she has to put her hand over his mouth to do it. And yeah. It's always something between them. So, but that's also when she finally touches him in episode 5 and she's like, I can't feel you. I was definitely legitimately crying at that point.
So sad. So what exactly happens when Rogue touches you? You lose your powers?
She basically drains your life force powers, memories out of you, and they go
terrible.
Into her. And she usually, it dissipates. And if she like stops touching you, you'll recover, but she can kill you. And there's been at least one prominent case where she trapped the psyche of another character inside herself. Huh. Carol Danvers.
Oh, Carol Danvers, huh?
Mm-hmm. And that's why she can fly, because she kept some of her powers.
Interesting.
Although they resolved that. That's also a story arc in the original series.
Yeah, because I was very confused about the lack of fall damage for her, especially because she's like going everywhere.
Yeah.
She's going everywhere.
Yeah, she's also pretty OP.
Do you like her accent?
I don't know. It's the same voice actress as the original, but for some reason I preferred her in the original more than this. And sometimes it's a little put on thick.
It's kind of a caricature of a Southern accent, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that's what bothers me, is not that she's Southern, but it feels almost over, like you said, it's thick. It's overdone.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it took me out a little bit, I have to admit, in this version. Yeah. Even though it's the same actress. Maybe yeah. It's just, it hasn't aged as well.
She is a very cool character, though. I mean, I remember, isn't she part of like the opening of the original X-Men?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, she's one of the main characters, yeah.
Of the Fox X-Men movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, so they kind of combined her and Jubilee in a way. Hmm. You know, they aged her down, and a lot of people were really upset with that version because, you know, they made her personality completely different and pining after Wolverine. And yeah.
I mean, that whole arc sucked me right in, though, in that original movie. I think she's just a great character overall.
I mean, I agree because I'm the same age as the actress who played her, Anna Paquin. So she was really my POV character going into those movies.
Yeah, and I was a kid too. So it felt like that's a great way to put it, right? Is we need somebody relatable to view these weird X-Men through.
Right. And in the original series, that character is Jubilee.
Okay.
Because Jubilee is the one, the first episode starts with her getting into a spot of trouble and being rescued by the X-Men. And that's how she joins the team.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah. So Gambit, do you think it's his biggest surprise death since Ned Stark, or am I?
I don't think I had enough of an attachment to Gambit to feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But maybe if I
was, my heart was ripped out.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't think he's going to remain dead though. I mean,
no,
this is comic book Marvel. He's coming back in some way.
Yeah, there's a good idea of how he'll come back, but I'm gonna save comic spoilers, not say comic spoilers in this episode, probably talk about it with Jean, but I just think they're gonna do it in a way that just breaks our hearts all over again. So that
is it gonna be like erasing his memories or having a multiverse version of him? And
there's not a multiverse version, but basically I mean coming back as an entity and a dark side entity.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
So speaking of the dark side, we've got our villains. We've got a succession of ever-increasing baddies, and the Sentinel attack on Genosha, though, is naturally pinned on the creator of the technology, Bolivar Trask. But after Rogue takes him out in a chilling character moment, it becomes clear that the real power behind the robo-revolution is Bastion, a combination of the previous series villains Master Sentinel and Nimrod, sent back in time and reborn as a human. So he's basically also pulling the strings on another classic villain, Mr. Sinister, who we already talked about a bit. And Mr. Sinister is basically going along with this because he still wants that Summer's baby for his own nefarious purposes. And Bastion's built an army of living sentinels out of quote-unquote volunteers, which are not all quite willing, including his own mother. What did you think of that twist?
Insane. I was baffled by this whole Bastion thing. I don't know why I didn't bring it up earlier. It did feel like this is part of why the finale was confusing to me, is I didn't know where these people came from.
Right.
And I could not piece it together based on the information I had, at least not on first watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they could have done a little bit better of a job giving context to it.
Yeah.
But I think then you take away from the twist.
Yeah. But if they were going along at such a fast speed, I think if they just slowed down just a little bit.
Yeah. Add one episode of origin story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you can just make more references, and because they did do that with certain things, you know, where they characters talked about like, oh, well, I went through this whole thing, and, you know, and they're referring to events that happened in the prior series, but at least mm-hmm. they talked about it and acknowledged it and set the stage. Yeah. Yeah. But this is, of course, also that whole thing that like where they have. So Dr. Cooper, she releases Magneto, and Magneto does this whole blackout and then retreats to Asteroid M, to his base there. And we get the classic X-Men setup where the X-Men want to stop. You know, we have Bastion trying to crash the asteroid into the Earth to kill humanity, because at the end he's decided that he just gives up. And we have the X-Men trying to stop it, but then the humans are panicked, not trusting the X-Men. So they shoot the asteroid down into themselves.
And, yeah, like they make it way worse.
Yeah, exactly. So they're trying to stop the thing, and the humans just make it happen because of a lack of trust. This is a classic X-Men setup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even Captain America's like, oh man, what are we doing here?
Yeah, exactly.
And can I just say, I really liked when, I think it was Rogue, right, threw Captain America's shield away.
Right.
Go get it.
Yeah.
And so, you see Steve like, oh, all right.
I do, you know, I talked about the women being untrustworthy, but I didn't like how Rogue treated Gambit in this season.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But I did like seeing her sort of devolve into the dark side. She's a character who's always towed that line in all but the Foxman movies. And we see her, yeah, start to just do petulant stuff like this. And of course, then when she loses Gambit, she just like completely loses her shit. She absorbs Gyrick's memories when he's in a coma. And she like kills Trask. And she's gone to the dark side then, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's rough. Yeah. When she straight up murders Trask, I was shocked. I was shocked they put that in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fun Easter egg. DeMeo actually picked out a random background characters from an episode in the original series to be Bastion's parents in this series. So when you watch it, there's just a couple in the background one episode, and he's like, yeah, and then right after this, the little, you know, spark of Bastion life creeps up daddy's leg and, you know, is ready for implantation.
Oh my God. That's funny.
And what do you think if Bastion had been allowed to go to Xavier's school, do you think that would have changed things? Or do you think that would have just ruined the X-Men?
No, I think it would have changed things. I think not that, you know, an upbringing can, I don't want to say fix, but can create a good person out of everyone, but it does help.
Yeah.
You know, nurture and nature both have a play, and he didn't have the nurture.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. And then, you know, when I was thinking about that, I was like, well, maybe I kind of understand why he made his mom into a robot.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it.
But yeah, so we get to that rapid fire roller coaster of the last episode. The Phoenix comes and goes. Bastion's captured, but not, although collaring him does save the Sentinel people. And we get that stormy friendship of Charles and Magnus. And I loved, by the way, so Sinister, he gets like sucked of all of his mutant powers that he applied to himself that were making him look young for centuries. And I love how he goes up and uses Morph as a mirror. I'm like, that is clever thinking of like, how do we use our characters in a unique way? It's like, Morph, show me what I look like.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. And we find out that everyone was hoping that Cable, who's a time traveler, was going to like undo the Genosha thing. But he's like, I tried 200 times.
Yeah, that's insane. Yeah. That was a great line.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I just kept trying and it's basically a fixed point. You know, it reminds me of Doctor Who. Like,
exactly.
Everything's a fixed point when we need it to be.
Exactly. Yeah. I have to say comics are the same.
Yeah.
I mean, Doctor Strange does talk about it in the MCU movies, too.
Okay.
But, yeah, it was an interesting character arc, too, with Cable at first rejecting Jean Grey. Like, you're not my mother. But of course, she also has like a similar psychic signature as Madeline. And then ultimately, he kind of saves her in the end and accepts her, not as his mother, but maybe as like a stepmother.
Well, I think she says, you know, my son at some point.
Right.
When
to
with
her,
the psychic,
he is. She remembers. Yeah.
Yeah. With like the psychic link when she mm-hmm. and Scott are just talking to her. Talking to him, rather.
Yeah. And I love Bastion was such a bitch. And then he was saying like all the meanest stuff. And then he rips off a Cable's arm and mm-hmm. bitch slaps him with it.
Yeah, that was mean. That was just mean.
I did gasp out loud.
But then he absorbs it. Like, I didn't understand at all how he did that.
He turned it into, like, an armor for himself.
But how?
Because he has, I guess he kind of, like, melted and shaped it in a way.
Okay. All right. I have no idea how that works.
Yeah. Comic book.
Yeah.
Cable's recovering. And this kind of sets up a character called Onslaught that I think might show up next season. There's a few different elements in play that might set up this character Onslaught for showing up next season. I just have to point out that Cable is the same character from Deadpool, but he's not going to be in the new movie, apparently. And then, yeah, we get X-Men Civil War, and Magneto, Rogue, and Sunspot split off and physically fight against the rest of them. Do you think Spotta Lee can ever recover from her sparkling at him?
Spotta Lee?
Jubison?
I don't know. I will just have to see.
Yeah. And then the worst was when Wolverine stabs Magneto in the back, literally. And then Magneto in something that it's straight out of a comic panel. They almost exactly copied this comic panel. He sucks all of the adamantium out of because Wolverine's skeleton is coated in adamantium.
Right.
So he sucks it all out of him through his skin, and Wolverine's living at the end, but left in recovery.
So does that he not brutal. Have his, I know he has like, he has biological claws, right? He has organic
right,
claws.
Right, he has bone claws. And in the comic books, this is how the bone claws were revealed. But of course, we watching in different orders, we know he has bone claws, yeah.
So he's in bone claw mode now. Like he does not have adamantium anymore.
Right.
Interesting. Right. That's a cool nerf for him.
Mm-hmm.
Is his healing factor adamantium based?
No, I think maybe it was just like such a trauma or something. Yeah.
Hmm.
Because he was the reason why they could put the adamantium in there into him is because of his healing factor.
Right. So he can handle it and more than anybody else.
He won't die from the procedure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he can keep doing the claws and sucking them back in, and he heals.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, definitely a cool twist for this, and I wonder if he'll get his procedure back or something like that, or if Magneto will be like, "Ah, here's your adamantium," and he'll be like, "Wow, that hurts."
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of people cross lines that they can't easily uncross, and I find that very interesting because they. You know, it's not that they are killing characters left and right, although it feels like it, but they are creating situations that, you know, you can't just say, oh, next week, all better.
Right. Yeah. The adamantium thing is a pretty big nerf for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
They definitely want us to see the X-Men struggle between the Storm thing and the Wolverine thing. And then, of course, they could just pull out Phoenix when they need it.
Yeah, and I think that's a good analogy for life. If you have power of any sort, power, money, whatever, you can lose it. And then, you know, you have to learn to live life without that superpower.
Right.
So, and then they have set things, the way they set things in the at the end of the episode, and then there's also a mid-credit scene. So if anyone missed the mid-credit scene, go back and watch it. We find out that 6 months later, Bishop is telling Forge that the X-Men are trapped in time, and Cyclops and Jean are in 3960 AD, a desolate future where they encounter Mother Ascani and a young Nathan, and Rogue, Nightcrawler, Beast, Xavier, and Magneto are in ancient Egypt in 3000 BC, where they meet En-Sabah-Nur, a young version of Apocalypse. In the present, Apocalypse visits Genosha and picks up Gambit's Queen of Hearts card and says something about death.
Huh. And there's a Flarkin in the background, of course.
Yeah, sorry. He wants me to stop recording and start playing.
Well, we're almost done. You could tell him we're almost done.
I'm
interested to see what they do with this. I like this whole idea of they're going back in time. How are they going to get back? Is Cable going to be involved, etc.?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they set up so much there, and you know, comic book readers and people who know those stories have a good idea of what's coming. They have some really exciting Easter eggs in there, but it's also just exciting, I think, if you don't know who you know, Mother Ascani is, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm interested in finding out more because, again, I think you know a lot more about who these characters might be than I do.
Right. Right. No, but I think that it's an exciting conclusion, cliffhanger, whatever, regardless, whether you know a lot or are just fresh to these characters in this story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exciting stuff. Shall we bring in the listeners to give their feedback?
Let's do that. Because I think they are excited too.
Adrin of House Sardonic, I think he meant.
Sarconic? Or yeah, Sardonic.
Sarconic.
Yeah.
I think he meant sardonic. Uh-huh. Alicia and John, as with most fandoms, I don't feel I have much to contribute to the conversation since my knowledge of things tends to run skin deep. However, I finished the final episode of X-Men 97 and wanted to share that even for a casual fan such as myself, it was so moving, I was brought to tears. Not weeping. I don't want to ruin my street cred, but I had tears in my eyes. Specifically around two scenes, Jean and Scott talking to Nathan and Magneto reflecting on his life experiences. In both cases, family is at the core of the scenes. Impending loss in one, past loss in another. Because of the fast-paced nature of the show, especially in the first few episodes, neither scene was given more than a minute on screen. But the writing and acting, something that I think is given enough credit, add a history and sorrow to them that I think competes with the best of television. I expected explosions, I expected action, I expected drama, but I did not expect melancholy. Mm. That beautiful emotion that encompasses joy and sorrow in equal measure. I bid a fond farewell to this show, eagerly await the next season, and am now considering a dive into the comics that inspired this amazing show.
Very eloquently written.
I agree. Adrin of House Sardonic.
Adrin of House Sardonic? There's no A in here. I don't know if that was a typo.
Yeah, I think it's a typo because I'm 99% sure this is Adrin.
Yeah, I know. I think so too.
I agree. The emotional depth of this show is shocking for an Adventure of the Week cartoon.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what good X-Men, and that was also the case with the original, but now, you know, with more modern storytelling methods and animation and things like that, they can go even deeper.
Right. Shall we listen to Dork of the Ninja's voicemail? Sorry.
Let's do it.
Hey guys, just wanted to get my thoughts on X-Men 97. I will say I was completely surprised by this entire series. I expected it to be a fun, like, Saturday morning cartoon, which definitely has that. But the fact that it went to a much darker place than I was expecting, with iconic moments of, like, Wolverine having the enemy team ripped from his bones by Magneto, to moments of the Geonosha attack, which floored me. That was when I realized what this series was, and I was realizing I absolutely love this series as a whole, and I want more of these type of things, and realizing, hey, Marvel, not everything has to be set in the main continuity, and I want more things like this now. Just, yes, What If is good, which is gives us stuff that's not in the main continuity, but this gives us that, but it's like, it's a true story instead of just like, here's a quick episode, in and out, okay, bye. This is, here's a full arc of just complete story, just good character building. I just want, yes, this is building off the original X-Men series from the 90s, but this went further than that series ever did in the best type of way, and I just want more things like this, and I just love it, and I cannot wait for the next season, whenever that pops up. Also, I was definitely got confused, not confused, but I had a pet theory of my die in the last episode. I was expecting Onslaught to happen as a result of the whole thing with Magneto and Professor X, of them like being entangled in each other's minds. I expected Onslaught to happen as a result of that. If you don't know what that is, oh boy, that's a lot. But just wanted to give my thoughts. Love the series. Love y'all's coverage of everything in the entire universe of Marvel and outside. Looking forward to House of Dragon coverage and, of course, Rings of Power. All right, y'all have a good one. Bye.
Yeah, so Onslaught's definitely something Jean and I will discuss in more depth. But like I said, I think that they have set everything up for that entity to appear next season.
That's cool. I love that if you, because that's my favorite thing, right? I mean, we just did our teaser breakdown for Rings of Power, and right. I couldn't do a teaser breakdown for this show, but I love hearing that the Marvel lore hounds, mm-hmm. Marvel lore heads, could really tell where this is going.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, this is one of the most remarkable comic book adaptations because I just couldn't believe how faithful it was. They changed stuff. You know, they changed the origin of Madeline Pryor a bit, for instance. They sped things up. But it was really like, oh, I think they're going to do this storyline. Like, well, yes, they are going for this storyline and all in one episode. Oh, my God.
That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. I really like that.
Yeah. And I think that the best person to wrap up this discussion is the person I talk to most about this series, which is Deadeye Jedi Bob. And I actually asked him to share his thoughts on the season because he's someone who is a super fan of the original growing up. So okay. He's got a bit of it's a longer voicemail.
I've been hearing Deadeye Jedi Bob quite a lot on the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast lately.
Yeah. So, you know, he's a lore hound at heart through and through.
Absolutely. All right, here we go.
Hey, lore hounds. It's Deadeye Jedi Bob. So when you're born totally blind, when you're a fan of superhero stuff in the 90s, there's not much to go by. So when X-Men, the animated series, the original animated series, came across my TV screen during May of 1994, it was my gateway into all things Marvel. It did so much for me as a fan of superheroes because, well, I didn't live with my brother, so I couldn't have comics narrated to me. And I think the original animated series adapted so many beloved story arcs from those comics and put them into a form of media that I could really sink my teeth into. X-Men, the animated series, the original show, introduced me to serialized storytelling as well. We got so many shows in the 90s and 80s that ended every episode on a good hearty laugh. Everything was kind of wrapped up nice and neat in a little bow, but X-Men left you with cliffhangers practically every week. And as Stephen King says in his foreword to the Green Mile serial novel, I'm paraphrasing here, you were left waiting to see the next twist of the snake. He's talking about how Dickens would serialize the chapters in his novels. But that's how I felt with the animated series when I was a kid. I remember when we got to the end of those 76 episodes, I was thinking, well, it was a good run. But barring movies someday, I guess that's all I'm going to hear from the X-Men. And the movies, they'd come and gone, and I like them. But to me, the characters in this animated continuity, well, they're always going to be my X-Men. It's a show that I've come back to, I don't know how many times since it went off the air. And when X-Men 97 was announced, I was very optimistic. I didn't want to let that 10-year-old part of myself get all hyped up for it, dream up what I wanted to see in my head, then be let down when the show premiered. I wanted the writers to tell their story and then, see what I thought when it was over. And I got to say, season one shattered all of my expectations. I went into this expecting to really enjoy it. I went in wanting to see Cable, Mr. Sinister, more of what he was doing with mutant DNA, what his plans were. And I got so much of that as X-Men 97 aired from start to finish. I was glad that they brought Allison Seeley Smith back to voice Storm. I wanted to see more story concerning her. I got that, and I liked what we got in season one. I think my only critique of season one is that I wish we'd gotten more episodes. Look at Star Wars The Bad Batch on Disney Plus. They got like 16 every season, except season three, where they pretty much got 15. And I feel like X-Men 97 could have benefited from at least three or four more episodes. It was such a good season, but way too short. I wanted so much more than what we got. It felt like going to a restaurant someone serving you a very tasty steak or whatever your favorite food is, but you only get a, well, you get a small portion of it. You really enjoy it, but when it's over, when you're done, you're like, well, where's the rest of it? This was good. This was really tasty, but I wanted more. I really loved what we got concerning Mr. Sinister. I loved finally getting to see that moment where Scott realizes who his son is. There's a moment in season two of the original animated series where Jean, she gets a sense of who Cable is, and she tells him, this man is more important to our future than anyone could possibly imagine. And we got that. We got that moment in X-Men 97 season one. When I was just starting out in college, I'd played a video game, a fighting game called X-Men The Next Dimension. And we were introduced to, well, I was introduced to Bastion in that game. And I always thought, wouldn't it have been cool to see him in the animated continuity? And by God, we got that in season one. And I loved what they did with Bastion so much. I think Theo James nailed the performance. That's kind of the voice I heard in my head when thinking of Bastion. He was very soft-spoken. I don't want to call him Sinister because that name's already taken, but I really enjoy what we got with his character, and I hope we're not done. I was hoping to see Apocalypse in season one, because the last time we saw this character, he'd possessed Fabian Cortez, and Apocalypse got himself a new vessel. But of course, they saved that for the mid-credit scene at the end of the season finale, which I absolutely loved. I don't mind them saving Apocalypse for next season, because I feel like they're really going to do the character justice. I love whoever they got to voice him at the end of X-Men 97 season one. I think he did a fantastic job. I think the guy who'd voiced Apocalypse later on in the series, he laughed too maniacally, a bit too much. And the feel I get from whoever the new guy is voicing Apocalypse, because we don't know that yet, it's just after the finale as I'm recording this, I think he just nailed it. The first voice actor who did Apocalypse, John Colicos, his name was, he was very nefarious in all the right places. You got a couple of chuckles from that version of Apocalypse. And I think this character is shaping up to dominate season two. I was wanting to see Onslaught, the Onslaught entity in season one. So hopefully they're going to go there as well. I can't wait to see what Apocalypse is going to be doing with Gambit in season two. Our X-Men are trapped in ancient Egypt, and we're going to get to see them meeting a very young Nsaba Nur. I can't wait to see where that's going to go. I would imagine Kang is probably involved with bringing them here. We're going to get to see Mother Ascani in the future timeline with Scott and Jean. So when it comes to what I'm looking forward to in X-Men 97 season two, all of that. And I know we're probably getting a season three as well. That's also in development. So I loved season one. Wish we could have gotten a bit more when it comes to episodes. I mean, that's really my only critique. I wanted a heck of a lot more than what we got, but I loved what we got and cannot wait for season two. I don't know how long we're going to have to wait until then, but I'm all here for whatever we get next. And thanks for having me on, you guys.
Yeah, so a lot of that we talked about already, but just saying Kang involved with bringing them to ancient Egypt, one of the most popular or best known incarnations of Kang is a character called Rama Tut. And we said Mother Ascani is a very important character to the Summers family and mutants as a whole, but I'll hold back that spoiler for now. But if you know, you know.
Well, thanks, Deadeye Jedi Bob, because I think you're onto something with this whole, you know, I wanted more. I have been a known critic of the whole we have to be married to the 8 or 10 episode season. At the same time, I was left wanting more at the end of this season, and that's a good thing because now I will definitely tune in day one to season two.
Yeah, I think season two needs weekly coverage.
Yeah, I'm kind of there with you. I'm probably going to show up for that.
Excellent.
All right, Alicia, since your neighbor is drilling, I think it's time that we do the outro.
The neighbor wants me to stop podcasting now.
Yeah, the neighbor's done. The Farkin's done. Yeah. It's time to finish up. Let's just do a quick outro. I said to David, I was like, I'm not doing this whole list everything we're ever doing anymore in the outro because it's too much. So I'm going to list what we're doing this week because it's a lot already. House of the Dragon season 5 and 6 just dropped on the public feed. Season 1, episode 5 and 6. David and I covered We Light the Way and The Princess and the Queen. Then you and I, Alicia, did Doctor Who season 1, episodes 1 through 3.
Space
that
babies.
Was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
The Rings of Power season 2 teaser reaction is up with Marilyn R. Pukila and David. And we also made this visual guide, which is super cool, on Notion that's available to the public, which usually our Notion stuff is not. Usually it's a Patreon or Supercast exclusive benefit, but this is a little treat for everybody with the teaser. And tonight, David and I are recording episode 4, A New Hope, of Star Wars. That is if my voice holds up, because my whole family is getting sick. All right, Alicia.
And I also have to throw out that this weekend, David and I are recording the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes one shot. So
If
anyone has any feedback, please send that into to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com.
All right. Is that coming out this week or next week?
It came out last week.
Oh, no, I mean the podcast.
Oh, the podcast. Well, we're recording it Saturday, so it'll be out probably Sunday or Monday.
Okay.
It's probably right. Monday.
We'll keep an eye out. I'll add it. Mm-hmm. I'll add it to the list on the podcast.
Yeah, no, I didn't Discord. Say I think it's going to come out Monday, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I've been doing this podcast schedule on the Discord, and it has all our Lorehounds podcasts plus all our affiliate podcasts. Alicia, tell me what you're doing over on the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast and We'll Shift Dust.
So We'll Shift Dust, I'm just editing right after this, the episode 4 through 6 breakdown of season 2 of Beacon 23. So that will be out, hopefully tonight. And then, on the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, we just put out an episode about the Knights of the Old Republic games. And, next week, we're going to be diving into the High Republic now. So there'll be an overview, and we've got some, shorter episodes about a preview of the Eclipse game, and also an episode about season 1 of Young Jedi Adventures. So that's why I'm watching that. You and I, John, are going to get into the Acolyte weekly breakdowns.
I'm excited. I think it's going to be a really good season.
Yeah, me too.
Radioactive Ramblings is going forward into the wasteland. They are still doing some Fallout coverage with the Fallout lore series on Origins of the Brotherhood of Steel is already out. And then they also are doing a podcast on Invincible season 2. They just did the second half of the season this week. So check that out over on the Radioactive Ramblings feed. Properly Howard is going strong with a Dune 2 review this week. They'll be back with Felonies and Fugazis next week. And Rings and Rituals, which is a fantastic podcast and more people need to listen to it, is back with episode 5, Partings, from the Rings of Power season 1. So if you're on that Rings of Power hype train with us, you should be listening.
I've been
that.
Seeing nothing but rave reviews from people who have like actually come to find the Lorehound server because of that podcast. So those who are listening really seem to love it.
Yeah, for sure. I think it deserves more listeners.
Yes.
All right. Alicia, we're here to thank the patrons. Of course, you can sign up for Patreon or Supercast and get early and ad-free access to our podcast. You can get show guides like the House of the Dragon show guide, the Shogun show guide, and the Rings of Power show guide, which I'm calling One Guide to Rule Them All. And that one's forthcoming, but we got plenty of features over on the Patreon. And you're going to be on Second Breakfast now, Alicia, which I'm excited for.
Yeah, very excited. Gonna have scheduled in to watch the first movie from our new system. Looking forward to talking about how we're doing the new movie selection system,
mm-hmm,
which
mm-hmm.
you came up with.
And I, you know what? I love a good poll. And so we're going to be doing a Patreon exclusive podcast where we talk about life, what we're watching other than what we're covering and what we're playing, what we're reading. Then we're going to watch a patron and Supercast member picked movie. Very exciting.
Are the results,
Alicia,
final?
Sorry, what's that? Oh, I don't think it's final yet. I think we have one more day. Let's see here. I'll check in live time. It is not final. One day left. So if you want to vote for Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, or Zoolander, head on to the Patreon right now. Alicia, can you thank our Discord server boosters and our lore masters?
Yes, to the sonic accompaniment of my neighbor. Thank you so much to our Discord server boosters, Gnarls, Aaron K., Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, and Doove71. And thank you especially to our lore masters who make all of this possible, Samarshan, Michael G., Michelle E., David W., Brian P., Nick W., SC, Peter OH, Bettina W., Adam S., Nancy M., Doove71, Brian8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Eric F., Matthew M., Sarah M., DJ Miwa, Andra B., Kwang Yu, Jedi Jedi Bob, Nathan T., Alex V., Aaron T., Sub-Zero, Aaron K., Dally V21, Mothership 61, Gnarls, and of course, as always last, Adrienne.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for being here with us on the MCU. I hope Jean can rejoin us soon. For now, you'll have to deal with me. I should have made a theme for this. It's such a good theme. Yeah. All right.
Next season. Well,
for now, you get the regular MCU outro. Bye.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities.
Hey Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.